Hello and welcome. In this episode, I have a chat with Corina, an awesome chief marketing officer for a development agency based in Cluj-Napoca, Transylvania. We learn about what digital marketing, communication, social media, and product strategy means for various organizations, mostly technology startups, and of course, the skills one needs to handle those. We talk about networking, mentors, taking risks, and moving places in order to pursue exciting work and to grow as a professional. All right, let's get to it. Enjoy. Okay, Corina, thanks so much for joining my podcast. So it's going to be awesome to start off by giving the listeners a short summary of your bio.
Chief Marketing Officer at Wolfpack Digital. I'm helping startups and tech products in medtech, fintech, social, IoT, software as a service to grow to the next level through data-driven decisions and actions and optimization, which basically means to identify new distribution channels and strategic approaches to, you know, increase monthly recurring revenue and grow the company healthy and with steady KPIs, not like magic.
All right. Sounds pretty cool. Let's start all the way back with your studies, if I may. I mean, I'm interested. What did you study, first of all, and why did you study that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's a bit funny as well, especially because I'm a marketer. I hold a degree in environmental engineering. So, I don't know, it involves the design and implementation of processes and technologies that handle all different kinds of environmental issues that we face today, which is a nice field. I love it. It's the unique combination of all sorts of exact sciences. And they bridge the gap between, I don't know, environment and human health at the end of the day. And I basically switched to marketing when I was a student as well, because I joined an NGO back then that was for students in the technical universities. What I actually loved the most was that technical people don't know how to talk about what they do. They are really good at what they do, but they don't know how to talk about it, or they do it in their own very technical way. So in this NGO, they were doing amazing things and they were pretty unable to talk about it. So I jumped in and I was like, I could try to translate that for you. And it just stuck with me. And fast forward 10 years later, I'm doing this for a living.
All right, cool. So marketing was on your radar even back then when you were in school, in university.
Yeah, actually, I was able to pay my rent while I was
really?
A student. Yeah, by doing marketing stuff back then. Well, I started with small things like social media management. I actually was the social media manager for my university for around 2 years. It was fun, and ghostwriting, and I was also doing the presentations for lots of students for their projects. And it's pretty similar to pitch decks nowadays, if we think about it, because they had to have this presentation about their project and why is it good and the technology they used. And, you know, they were literally pitching their project, and I was paid to do that for them, basically, to create the presentations.
Right. I remember when we were in Cluj, for example, and I remember the pitch of Andre and your startup back then. Well, it was for me coming, having an engineering background, it was marketing is pretty cool. I mean, Corina, so you were dealing with social media. How was it like? And I'm curious, because I have this conversation with many, many guests of mine on my podcast. Mm-hmm. How is it that we as millennials and even the younger people like Gen Z and all these people, we are attracted by technology. We want to work in tech companies, we want to work with startups and doing interesting things. How, what clicked and how did you decide to become a social media manager?
I think it's different when you graduate communication and marketing. That's what what you aim to be nowadays. Yeah. But back in 2009 or 2010, when I did this, actually, it just came to me. So I was in this NGO and I was part of some university fairs, and I was helping them in organizing all sorts of communication things and their booths, and they were trying to be as student friendly as possible. And they were like, Corina, you're a student, you know what clicks for students. We don't know, we are teachers, we have no clue. So I was trying to help them, and I was like, well, if I'm going to this international educational fair for you and I'm going to represent you, how about communicate it and using your social channels? And they were like, yeah, you could do that, because we don't know what to do with that. So it just basically came to me as a way to communicate with students. In my mind, it was like, it was not, I want to be a social media manager. I want to communicate the right thing to the right audience. And students were on Facebook back then. So I was like, then we have to communicate this on Facebook. So it just came quite naturally to me, not as a dream job. And after that, it was like, oh, so if you're doing this for them, you could do this for our business as well. And soon enough, people were paying me for that, and I could pay my rent. And I was like, oh, this could be a job. So for me as a technical student, it was not something that I thought about. I was, in my mind, it was, I want to be an engineer, I want to do that. So I never thought about social media management, content marketing, copywriting. I was like, I like to write text, I like to communicate. So I think social channels are from a user perspective, or from a human perspective, they're like the way we read news and keep in touch with the others nowadays. So it was natural to see it as a way of doing my job at the end of the day. And as a professional nowadays, yeah, I could say that once I was a social media manager, but again, it was not something that I aimed for. It just came to me and just grew with me in a way.
You know, if I may say, it was the right timing, I think, for all of us. I mean, just jumping on this trend.
Yeah. It was actually booming back then, and the reach was amazing. I mean, the reach I had while doing some social media posts when I was a student was something that agencies have nowadays as their KPIs. It's a total it was a good thing, and it was definitely a good period to start with that. Yeah.
Okay, right. So you are doing your studies, you are involved in this NGO. What advice do you have to give for other students? Would you encourage them to try as many things as they can? Internships, NGOs, and
yeah, that's for sure. So I was 100% sure that I want to be an engineer when I started. I was 100% that I want to save the planet and find some new biotechnologies that will change the world in a way. And in a couple of years, I realized that I'm pretty good at something else, that I really like it, that it's engaging, and that I can actually help lots of businesses and lots of products to do what they are really good at, and they are not able to communicate. And having a technical background also helped me give them advice in terms of product, processes, algorithms, architecture, because, well, at core, it's the same. It's still mathematics or physics or, you know, the exact sciences. So for me, it was mind-blowing to see how many things I learned from volunteering. And it was not the action itself, like the things that NGO had as a purpose, but the entire framework. So I had to learn how to work internationally, how to use normal emails, how to create, I don't know, all sorts of filters in my emails, how to create subject lines that are catchy and people are going to read, fundraising, communication, project management, cultural differences. That's the biggest thing that I learned in that NGO, because I had to deal with 33 countries, people from 33 countries, and around, I think there were around 90 cities. That's huge. People were extremely different, and I learned from them a lot. So I definitely advise all the students to to volunteer in something they like or they think they like, and to try as many things as possible, because you never know what you actually like. And at 18 or 19 years old, you have actually no idea. I mean, you have no idea at 30 either, but at 19, it's a bit overwhelming. So, yeah, that's definitely something that I advise them. And, well, you also get to have a really large network and to, I don't know, to do normal jobs that we don't have in the student life, besides the tests and exams and homeworks and, yeah.
Right, right. So what's next? And by the way, I mean, you studied in a really cool town, Iași. It's a really nice place.
Yeah. I did. I actually went there because it was not my favorite city, I have to admit it. And I apologize to everyone who lives there. But I went there because they have the most advanced labs in terms of environmental engineering in the country. So I went there because they are top of in this field. So, and they were really good. But after that, I moved to Brasov because it was not my type of city, as mentioned.
Brasov, somehow you ticked all the cool places in Romania. We will talk about Cluj, we will talk about Brasov and Iași. Really,
I did. Yeah.
So how was it like? And so you moved out from Iași and you're living in Brasov now in Transylvania. How is it like? And what are you doing at this time?
Back when I was a student, I was commissioned to help in a business event with their communication and some part of their VIP networking component of that event. And I met someone who was an organizer of that event, and we managed to chat a bit, and they mentioned about a business in Brasov who was actually looking back then for a communication specialist. I told them that I might be interested, so we could have a chat, and those guys were actually in Iași back then, and we met for a coffee. We clicked. I started to freelance for them because I was still a student. So I was freelancing for them. And then when I graduated, basically, I had my presentation for the degree on a Friday. And on a Saturday, I packed all my stuff. On Sunday, I moved to Brasov. And Monday morning, I was in the office signing my paperwork and the agreement. So it was a pretty fast change from being the student in Iași, if you want, or the engineer graduate, to being a communication specialist, I think it was the name, or PR specialist. I don't remember the name, because it was like you just pick a name for your role, because so this was a consultancy company. They were consulting lots of businesses and startups in doing their business plan, getting grants, getting funds, and everything in terms of growth. And then they also had some sorts of consultants for different types of funds. We have EU funds and all sorts of other types of grants. And I was there as a communication specialist for them. But soon enough, I became a consultant in terms of communication for their clients as well. And somehow I that business grew a lot in 3 or 4 years that I worked there. Not because I worked there, because the business, I mean, everyone's
effort. You all know it was thanks to you, right? So otherwise...
No, that's why I did mention, because the business grew. with it, other, I will call them satellite businesses, came with it somehow. So we also opened a co-working space there that I was a shareholder in it, because I was working with them, and we arranged this type of business, which was really nice. So I was the communication specialist for this consultancy company. I was the consultant for lots of businesses they were working with, and some institutions or city halls in Romania. And then with this co-working space, it was insane. I did a lot of things there, but basically that's how I learned how to work with super, super different people and different... I mean, it's not the startup world we know right now. I also worked a lot on some projects with disabled people, which was, again, another super good exercise for me. We had lots of coworkers that were disabled, and they were really good at their jobs. Working with them, it's different than knowing about it. So, again, I learned a lot about stigma. I learned a lot about all sorts of labels we put on people, before actually working or speaking to them. And I learned how to communicate all sorts of things in this field. So from wheelchair basketball, I had some projects to work on, or to city halls and institutions, or to, I don't know, architecture projects. So it was a really, really wide job back then. So after that, I felt that I'm learning a lot, but at some point it was too much. It was all over the place. And I felt the need to go in one way. I can't do everything. I mean, I can apparently, but I don't want to. It's not sustainable for the long term. It's not healthy. It was not healthy for me to keep going. It was not sustainable for me. It was not my cup of tea. So yeah, I did all sorts of things in terms of communication and marketing and consultancy back then. It was a really, really good place to open the co-working space as well.
Awesome. At some point, you were all over the place. You were doing marketing, you were doing communication, consulting, working with these co-working spaces and so on. And is it fair to say you were quite a generalist at that point?
Yeah, definitely.
What's your approach when it comes to being a generalist versus a specialist?
I think they're both good.
yeah. It's not a good or bad. It's not a...
No. Yeah, you're right. So yeah, I was quite a generalist. And I think that in order to be a specialist, you first need to be a generalist. That's for sure. Because once you learn from all over the places, you gather a lot of experience from all different things you get in touch with, and different approaches and different point of views and everything. And once you decide to go into one path, no matter which one is it, it's gonna be not easier. I don't want to use that word, but you're gonna use way more creative ways to do your work, because you have a really good mindset already. You've built a lot of experience based on different things before, and now you can place all that general experience into one field and focus on that one field and make it really, really good. So I think they combined together, they are really, really good. And I think working with generalists and specialists, it's the best approach from my point of view. Both of them are for different people. I mean, some people prefer to be generalists forever because that's fun for them. Some of them prefer to be specialists right from the start, which I can't understand, but I see that it's happening. So I respect that. But yeah, both of them are really, really good, and it depends how or when you approach them and on your personality and experience, for sure.
Okay, Corina, so what's next after Brasov?
Yeah, so for me, it was, I was still thinking about technology a lot, because going back at core, I really wanted to be an engineer. So technology was always in my mind, or in the back of my mind, of course. And that's how I started my marketing or communication career, because I wanted to help technical people communicate their ideas or their work to everyone so they can understand it. And basically, after these years in Brasov, I was like, I want to do that. I really want to do that. And fortunately, in Brasov, I had the huge luck of working with lots of IT companies, because I had to be a consultant for them, or because we had events within this company that I was already working with. And I've worked with a few really cool startups there. One of them actually managed to be at TechCrunch Disrupt with their product. So it was huge. And working with them, it was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. Again, it was a pretty simple change, because I'm a simple woman. Basically, someday I woke up and I decided to change my life. Actually, I had a really rough week with me being all over the place. And I said that it's too much for me and it's overwhelming, and I want to do this startup thing and tech field. So I just resigned and decided to move either to Bucharest or to Cluj with no idea what to do. And I actually wrote a message to my boyfriend on Facebook and told him, you know, I just resigned. Would you like to move to Bucharest or Cluj? And he was like, yeah, sure. Should I pack right now? I was like, okay. And I just announced a couple of friends that I have in the field that I resigned, and if they know any opportunity to let me know. I didn't apply to any job though. And I got in touch with a couple of startups. I never had a CV, by the way, so it was really awkward. So I got in touch with a couple of startups. Among them, it was Vista Analytics as well, the one that you've mentioned that you saw us in a pitching session. We had a couple of Skype calls. I told them that I don't have a CV, but I can cluster some projects that I've worked on, because everyone is like, so Corina, tell me about your degree. Did you graduate with communication? I was like, nope. Have you? No. So I just sent a couple of projects I've worked on with some KPIs and everything. It was a match. I moved to Cluj quite fast, basically, and started to work with Vista Analytics, the startup. I think I was the third employee, the second or third, after the CEO, of course. The CEO doesn't count because they are the founders, not the employees. Right. So I started to work with them. It was really, really nice. They've never had a marketing person before. I've never worked with an analytics startup. And for me, it was like, oh my God, so much data to look at. And I've been working with software products before, but not full time. It was it's different when you have to create some copywriting for them or some content, as I did before working with them, or when I had to represent them in some fairs and things like that, which was a lot of PR work in a way, not strategy work. So I was really talking to them of how they see the product, everything, how they see it, how they want to grow, and their plans. And the best part was that the CEO just told me, you know, Corina, we hired you because you know how this marketing thing works. So just do your thing and let us know what you want to do. I was just staring at my computer and thinking, okay, so I can do anything I want, which was really good because I could have lots of experiments. I could ask anything. I had the developers, they had a lot of patience with me because I really wanted to understand how the app works, the technology we work with, how scalable it is. And they were really patient to explain to me everything because, again, I knew how technical things work, but I was not technical enough to understand the differences between different programming languages and how scalable they are. This is already a bit specific. So I learned everything about that. And I think I did what would most marketers would call getting your hands dirty, because I started to do a bit of customer service so I can understand the pain points of all the customers and see how I can translate that into anything marketing related, because the product was at the beginning and we had barely no competition on the market. We had one app and the other one would be Google Analytics, but I don't see it as competition. And that was what I was telling to everyone. We are not competing with Google because, come on, we are in a different niche. We have a different audience. And that's what I was trying to frame and position with the product. So I started with doing a lot of research, reading a lot, learning about how technology works in this specific field, and learning how not only to use data for our own product, but to see how other people use data, because it was an analytics tool. So everyone was asking us a lot of things about every metric or how to use it. And I had to learn how to teach them how to use it. So it was an amazing experience. And somehow that's how I migrated in a way from communication to tech marketing and sort of product marketing, because being in a very specific market, in this case, we were an app on a marketplace. It was on Wix when I first started. So I had to find ways of bringing new users, of converting them, of keeping them within the app, while also position the product as a startup and make it visible in the startup world, investors world, and everyone. So I kind of migrated in the product marketing as well, which was really, really nice. We changed how the app worked. I spent, I think, hundreds of hours looking into how people use our app to find new ways to improve it. And I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying that. And other hundreds of hours reading reviews and customer support messages. So I think that's how I learned how to do tech marketing or software as a service type of marketing for customers.
Right. You offered quite a summary here. I mean, you touched all the points. I almost have no question left for you. But I'm interested. So if someone which wants to be working marketing right now, and mm-hmm. particularly in a tech company, how easy do you think it can be for a student or for a fresh graduate? I mean, do you think such skills that you need, it's taught in school, in university, either it's in Cluj, in Brasov, in Iași, in Bucharest, no matter. Do you think the educational system is teaching the students such skills and knowledge? Because I think it's quite niche, it's quite hype, it's quite new, Please be honest, yes.
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think this is something that is taught in schools right now, because our teachers before the pandemic never sent emails to us. They never had online presentations with us. And sometimes they did, okay, but they were not the best at what they were doing when they were doing it online, because they were taught with pen and paper. Everything was taught with pen and paper for them. So that's how they managed to teach people and the new generations. The good part is that in universities, no matter the field you're going to, so I don't want to say that don't do any sort of studies. No matter the field, you definitely learn discipline. Definitely you learn time management. You learn how to work with other people. And those are skills you still need. And projects and briefs and, I don't know, presenting your projects and things like that. So part of the skills, okay, you will learn them in universities. But to be specifically a tech marketer, as you've asked, well, tech marketing has a bit of tech, a bit of algorithm changes, some social media, lots of trends, plenty of strategy and dynamism, and tons of cross-references based on the product you're working on. So if you're working on a social media tool, you're going to have lots of social media stuff. If you're working on a productivity tool, you're going to learn a lot of project management. So tech marketing, it's a lot about the product you're going to work on. If you learn, I've been working with a bra startup. I learned a lot about fashion and bras, and that's something I never thought of before as applied in technology. Those are things you kind of learn by yourself and based on your curiosity, and you apply the skills you had before. In my case, I studied engineering, and I just took all the maths and physics and mechanics and everything. And I was like, okay, how can that be useful in an analytics startup or in tech marketing? Because looking into data, I had charts, or I needed to make my own formulas to find something that I was looking for. So that's where my studies were really, really good at, because I knew how to do all those spreadsheets, or how to make my own graphs, or how to make my own formulas for everything. I didn't need my BI to do it, or I don't know who else is going to do it. And in terms of social media and trends, I think this is where curiosity and the way you learn is the most important, because looking at all the younger people, I mean, younger than me, like in their 20s, they have no reason not to be good at social media. They have, I mean, we had to learn it. I learned what Facebook is quite late, because we didn't have social media. That was not a thing. But they grew up with it. They grew up with posting. They grew up with what works or what doesn't. So for them, it should be really easy to start with. But they need to be curious and learn the behind the scenes work and how to optimize, maybe, and how to be strategic. And that comes with, I don't know, self-learning in a way. And you really need to be motivated enough to keep reading, to keep testing and failing, because that's definitely a process that lots of people need to go through. And something that I've seen at some people that I worked with, I'm mentioning especially the really young ones, they were expecting the results as on social media, where you post something and you get the likes, you see the numbers right away, which is really nice. they have the need to see the response and the success right on the spot. But as a marketer for the long term, most of the good work, you don't see it on the spot. You see it in 6 months or you see it in 1 year. And that's about being consistent. That's about being careful on your KPIs constantly and working a lot and testing a lot, doing lots of experiments. And once you see that something fails, you have to be agile and iterate really fast. So you never learn that in school, unfortunately. Teachers don't let you fail and iterate. You either do it or you don't. So that's something that comes down to each person, type of personality or way of working or motivation at the end of the day.
I'm looking back on my notes now, and you moved out from Yash to Brasov like next day after graduation instantly, which again, it says a lot about you as a person. I mean, you have no fear of failure. You have no fear. You are curious. You want to stress things a bit. Mm-hmm. And you did the same when you moved out from Brasov to Cluj. It was so easy for you to just do this change, because for some people, it's not quite easy to move from one place to mm-hmm. another, to start it from scratch. And the key, I think, here is, so you mentioned you had no CV, no resume at all, but yet you ended up in a cool company. You had, I would say, a really nice network. We're going to touch, so we're going to I'm going to take a note on this one. And I want to touch the subject of network and how mm-hmm. how it helped you during your career. So let's leave behind the visitor analytics in Cluj, mm-hmm. and again still in Cluj, but what's on your plate right now?
Yeah, so you're definitely right that it's highly important to have no fear. I mean, there is some fear, well, but it's important to have the type of personality that it's okay to break things and move fast. That's the most important takeaway. So while working with these guys, I had lots of other startups coming up to me to help them out and provide some support or consultancy, some of them just for strategy, some of them for all sorts of recommendations. What's important to mention, I never work with two products or two companies that are in the same field in the same time, and neither in a time span of 2 years. So basically, I tried to avoid working with similar products or similar companies, which again, Romania is a small country. It's a really small country. So that would narrow my choices quite often. But fortunately, I had the network or the community you mentioned, because I was in that NGO back then that was huge, and everyone now is a grown-up and they have a startup and everything. So people were like, oh, Corinne, I know that you were really good at that when we were students, and now you're still in the field, so would you like to help out? Those were some people that reached out to me. Some of them just recommended me to other people that were in the startup world. And because while being in all these companies and this startup, I was also part of the TechStars community, because I was a speaker in the startup weekends. I also organized a couple of startup weekends in Brasov. So lots of startups were in contact with me, and they were reaching out, and I was planning actually to become a freelancer and be a consultant, a tech consultant for them. And that happened in 2019, October, I would say. So right before the pandemic hit. And my idea was that I should take a break after all these years when I just worked and worked a lot, and I just switched cities and started to work again. So I decided to take a break and travel. I was planning to do that for a few months. So it was bright to start by the end of 2019. So I just traveled to some countries, enjoyed my time for a few months. And among my clients, it was also Wolfpack Digital. So I was a consultant for them as well. And they were insisting, I would say, to work with them. And I kept saying that, no, B2B is not my cup of tea. I really like fast-paced environments, and I really like startups and everything, and I don't want to work in a company right now and everything like that. And I traveled a couple of months. I took a really good break and well-deserved. And then after around 3 months, I was like, actually, I could use a really a good B2B experience, because I didn't work in tech B2B before. I worked with startups, I work with B2Bs in different fields, but not necessarily this field. And I thought it would be a good experience for me. So I told them that I'm gonna join them as CMO as well. That was one of my requirements, part-time. So I still have some time for me. And I actually told them that it's going to be an experiment. I don't know if it's going to work, because it's not my cup of tea. I'm not sure if I like this. And they were okay with it. Yeah, 1 year and something later, I'm still here. Because fortunately, it's not the type of company I thought most of development agencies are. They're not corporate. They don't see people as, you know, a line in a spreadsheet. We work with lots of startups in different fields. And fortunately, these are the fields that I really like fintech, medtech, IoT, social. So these were the fields that I was looking for to work with. So it was an amazing opportunity for me.
To jump in, I find these things very millennial, I would say. Like, guys, I want to be a chief marketing officer, but I want to be part-time. I'm not sure if I want to work with you guys, but it screams like this.
We were working together, yeah, but we were working together for a couple of years when we had this conversation, but it was just maybe 1 hour or 2 hours per week, because I was just a consultant. I just did part of the strategy, and that's something that I also do for lots of startups right now. I'm the person who's making a strategy for them, providing them with some advice, checking the data. And then I'm like, you know, from here on, you implement it, and I'm going to help you along the way. And that's something that I really wanted to do here as well, because I don't see myself a generalist anymore. I am in a way, but I didn't see myself like, I'm not going to do social media management anymore, or at least not so much, because it's not my cup of tea anymore. Or I'm not going to do content writing so much. And their needs were showing me that they need this. And I knew that I don't want to do that. So that was actually the thing that led me to saying, I'm not sure that this is for me, because you are amazing, your company is amazing, the team is amazing, but what you need in terms of marketing is something that I'm not really sure that I want to provide, or I'm able to provide at this point with my mental space and experience and everything. But fortunately, they were okay with it. They mentioned that we can hire as many people as we need, just work together and make it happen, and we can adapt. So that was huge, and it was really important. And now, okay, I'm also doing small parts of everything, it's enough to still like it, and enough to still delegate lots of things.
Right. Awesome. Karina, so again, you've mentioned you had no CV, no resume. You had your network, you had your people. Do you think your personal brand had quite an impact when it comes to maybe this, mm-hmm. this company asking you to join them and mm-hmm. be like, it's not easy, yeah, to be a chief marketing officer. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. for sure it's not easy. It's
I have to quite, be at quite the difficult. Grown-up table, yeah.
it's quite difficult, and clearly you had a good run at the previous companies. You were doing quite a nice job, but I think what's important over here, people knew that you are doing quite a good job. Mm-hmm. So this personal brand, how did you go around that? How did you build such a strong and nice presence?
Yeah, I think personal brand is definitely something extremely important. I don't have the type of personal brand that most people associate with. Like, I don't have the clout with thousands of followers and everything that people consider highly important. But I always focused on the results of everyone that I worked with. So while most people think that personal brand means me showing up how cool I am and having really nice pictures and lots of followers and posting every day on my social media. I know, because if I would post every day on my social media, I would not have the time to do my work, unfortunately.
Right.
I don't have, no. So what I did was to do my best to see the brands and the startups and the products I worked with thrive and be successful, because their success is my success. For me, it's way easier to use them as a business card. Do you see that startup? They managed to grow from 8,000 users to 2 million. That's my business card, not my number of followers on Instagram. Basically, I would say that personal brand in my case was the fact that I was participating in lots of tech events where I managed to present the startup that I worked with and the results, which was, those were real numbers, you know, and things that you could see. You could actually, you can always Google the revenue of a company. You can always Google the growth or the number of users they have. And usually what I do is, like, I started to work with them in, I don't know, February. Just check out how the company changed before and after my arrival there. And that's what I use. And that's the personal brand that I think it's important, the success of the products you worked with. In most cases, I would not say lucky, but let's say lucky in this case. I was lucky because, as mentioned, I've been traveling a lot, so I met lots of people around the world. I've been volunteering that NGO, so again, I met lots of people that I kept in touch with, and they were all in the technical field, so again, it was my field as well. And they recommended me, or we kept in touch on different things. I was participating in lots of startup events across Europe, where again I met lots of people, or I was a speaker, or a mentor, or just a startup, and talked with a lot of people. So basically, it came natural to lots of people to contact me to work together or to recommend me, because they were like, "I know she did that." It was not a person who's doing this. It was, they did it, and they had examples. They were real. They had real examples of my work, and it was easier to convert them to being my clients than sending out CVs with, you know, telling them that I graduated environmental engineering. Very useful for them. Not easy to write down a beautiful piece of paper, especially if you're a marketer. It's easy to create a really nice CV, but it means nothing. I mean, I would never hire someone based on their CV. I literally prefer to meet them in person, or to see how they think about different things. I don't even care what they studied before. I don't even care where they worked before. Piece of paper, because I know cycling, that's really nice, but I can write cycling because I know the CEO of the company that I'm applying to loves cycling. So
that could work, you know.
Of course it could work. I'm not saying it's not working. It definitely works. It's just not my cup of tea. So in my case, I just clustered a few projects I worked on, different projects with a small brief, and the results and what I did and the results and some KPIs. And I was like, here's the work. You can go to any of these people and ask them about it. So I thought it more accurate. And okay. Of course, the network did the job. My presence did the job. Me talking about the results did the job. Me talking about what I do. So I think it's a mix of everything. It's not necessarily personal branding. It's a lot of work over the years.
Can you tell a little bit more about mentors, if you had any? Mm-hmm. And I believe this relates to network, and yeah, how important it is to have mentors.
I think it depends on the type of personality you have. I mean, everything depends, of course. I think mentors are great when you're really young. I think it's important to have a mentor that you truly believe in based on their experience, not based on their number of followers. I'm gonna throw back that again. And I think it's important when you pick up a mentor to be really, really aware of criticism and feedback, and take everything as a gift. You either apply it or not, but also with a grain of salt, because at the end of the day, no matter how good the mentor is, it's your experience, it's not theirs. And the context is different. What my context in terms of marketing was different back then, and providing advice to someone on how to start their career, because I started in a way, it's not the same. They have TikTok now. I didn't have it. It's different. They now have to be really interactive. I didn't have that. I didn't have to learn that at my 19 years old experience, you know. It's different. So they will still have to do the work. Now, in terms of having a mentor for me, I wouldn't say a mentor per se. So in that NGO, I did have a mentor when I joined the marketing department internationally. They would provide you with a mentor. So I had that person. They taught me about the processes, the organizational things, the differences between different roles within the organization and, you know, pretty much operational things. And they were also supporting me when I wanted to apply for different roles within that NGO. And they were telling me how to write my motivation letter. They would feedback it. They would provide me with different training sessions to attend. But again, I was a student and it was not a career mentor. It was within that organization. Afterwards, I would say that I worked with people who had the skills and the patience to be mentors without being official mentors for me. And fortunately, that went well for me. I never had to go to someone who would like to be my mentor, because the people I worked with, they were there and they were happy to help me along the way and mentor me when needed, but it was not something official for sure.
No, but it's nothing like that. It's more as in having a model, a role model to look up to and say, okay, maybe I want to be at least as good as this person in this kind of way, having a mentor. It can be someone from the family.
I think that's something that we can say now. But 10 years ago, there were no tech marketers. Not even 5 years ago in Romania, I would say. We didn't have marketers for startups because the startup market in Romania was not developed enough. We had marketers for corporations, for tech agencies. Yeah, we did. But we didn't have marketers focused on software as a service. That's how I started. I was looking around and I was, who here can help me with marketing for software as a service for the Brazilian market or for the Israeli market or for the Russian market? And we had none. So, or at least I didn't find them. I'm pretty sure there are somewhere, but I didn't find them. So it was different. I didn't have someone to look at from this perspective. I was just reading a lot. I was trying to find people in the US and in the Western countries doing similar things. And my research was, okay, which products I really like, which products are really good at doing, you name it, type of marketing. And then I was searching who's doing that job. And then I started to follow them on LinkedIn and to learn from them. So that's how I tried to learn.
Okay, so you are pretty much pioneering this stuff at least for Romania. I mean,
maybe they were, and I was living under a rock. It's really possible, but I didn't find them when I was looking for this.
All right, Corina. Tell me if there's anything I missed. For example, I know you write on Medium. you write quite in a nice manner. Again, this might be part of this personal branding. How do you show yourself online? Either it's on Facebook, either it's on Medium, either it's on. In fact, my question would be here: Does it matter on what kind of channel, on what kind of app you show yourself? I mean, does it matter you are more on TikTok? Does it matter you are more on Instagram or Medium or LinkedIn?
I'm going to be very generalist again, and I'm going to say it depends.
It depends, yeah, of course.
I think it really depends. In my case, Medium is my go-to channel because I talk and write a lot, unfortunately. And I really like to provide really insightful information. And I think social media is for fun in a way, or at least that's how I spend my free time, but not learning time, if that makes any sense. So I was thinking about people like me when I want to do some research and read some serious stuff. I'm not gonna type Facebook, neither Instagram. I'm gonna type something that I'm interested into, like some websites or Medium. It was in my case, I started to write on Medium because I bought a couple of domains for my own website, and I kept forgetting to pay my own hosting because I'm really, really careful and organized when I work for something, but not for me. I didn't have the time for me. I was working for them, and I was really happy, of course. That's why I did it. So I was actually looking for a solution to write down my articles without taking care of the entire process, like technical things, format things, and you know, everything in between. So I started to write on Medium. And the good part is that on Medium, there are lots of publishers, and they were reaching out to me, or people were just reading and writing all sorts of you can leave some sort of messages to people, like you can't chat, but you can highlight text, which was a feature that I loved. You can see what people highlight on your text. Oh my God, it was amazing for me. So seeing what people highlight, or all sorts of messages on how much they learn, of how much they learned from some articles, was really good for me. And then I just started to, I would not say write more often, because that would be a lie. I'm writing way less than I should, but whenever I write, I have the luck to be featured by lots of publishers. I've been featured by the startup. They have around, 800K followers. I've been featured by Better Marketing, another publisher, Prototyper, Ascent. I don't even remember all of them right now, but and they were like, would you like to feature this in our magazine? And they were like, yeah, sure, why not? So for me, it was quite a natural way to grow. It was not my choice. Like, I didn't woke up in the morning and chose Medium. No, it just came naturally. I like to write. It was the right social channel, if you want to name it like that, for this. It didn't require too much maintenance. People didn't look at followers on that channel that much. They look on the content per se. But I would definitely love to be active on TikTok right now. Yeah, I love it. I really, really love it. I just don't have the mental space to create content, and neither the time for that. Now, if people want to become, social media managers or influencers, then of course, Instagram, TikTok are the channels. If they want to do that for the US, maybe Twitter is the channel to focus on. That's why I think it really depends which channels are the best. It's really based on your skills, personality, and the things you want to represent you at the end of the day. For me, it's not the filters on Instagram, neither the tweets. I'm really bad at tweeting. I'm awfully bad at tweeting. So, yeah.
Cool stuff, Corina. Please tell me if there's anything else you want to add to our discussion.
I think I just mentioned lots of unpopular opinions here. I think the takeaway that I would just leave it here for everyone is to always keep in mind that no matter what I said or what other people said in the other podcast, or they will read all over the place, it's that at the end of the day, something might not be the right choice for you, and that's okay. And failure is also okay. That's how you learn. And seeing results really fast is really awesome, but that's not going to happen all the time unless you're a social media manager, which is nice. If you want to see results all the time really fast, go for social media management or for paid advertising. I think tech marketing and startups, it's a really awesome field, and it's really dynamic and big, and you have the whole world in front of you, and it's impossible not to find something that you really like. It's definitely impossible. Yeah.
What do you think it's next, at least for you? So you've mentioned quite some sexy and buzzwords here, like fintech, medtech, and so on. What do you think it's gonna happen in the next, let's say 5 to 10 years? If you would go back again in school, or what would be your thought process when it comes to what I'm gonna do with my life?
I would go for anything related to data.
Data. Okay, wow, yeah, data science nowadays, it's booming.
And it's gonna be there for a few years. So I would go for anything related to data and ethics, for sure, because, and it's important. I'm pretty sure it's gonna be, if there is not already a field with ethical data something. I don't know the buzzword for it, but let's just call it ethical data specialist for the sake of the conversation. The digital world was extremely fast. We all know that data is all over the place. We all know that. We are not gonna talk about Cambridge Analytica. We're not gonna talk about Facebook or Instagram. But in the same time, we really like good user experience. We really like to receive recommendations. That's why we love Netflix. You just go there and they're going to tell you what to watch next, because, you know, they know that, or Spotify. So it has a good side and a bad side, if you want to look at it like that. So data, it's extremely powerful. I can bet it's going to be a currency in a few years. You're going to trade it for different things. You can even sell it. I'm pretty sure about that. And we don't have the regulations across the world for how to manage data. And GDPR is a joke, and all the other are a joke at the end of the day. For how the technology advanced, all these regulations are not even near what it can be done with everything. So I'm pretty sure that if there are going to be any sort of fields that people are going to focus on, it's going to be on ethical use of your data, how to use that data in different ways for the good, maybe design, privacy by design, and things like that. So I would say that that's the next big thing, even though it's not going to be for the implementations change or for how the softwares and all the digital products will change based on how the data is used. You're going to still need it to process it, because data is still happening. I mean, it's going to have different shapes. Okay, it's not going to be used for advertising anymore, but it's going to be used for cross-collaboration between institutions, or cross-collaboration between countries, or cross-communication across different channels you use or services. And we all aim for simple experience, no matter. I mean, we hate it when we have to go to 5 institutions and provide our ID every single time. And it all comes down to data again, and how it's processed and used. Yeah, I think that's the field, and combined with ethics, it's the go-to. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. Right here, we have some winning tips for students. I mean, going to Tableau, going to Power BI, become a data scientist, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a huge thing.
Cool stuff, Corina. Let's leave it to that. It was a really nice discussion.
And, thank you.
Thanks a lot. It was such a pleasure having you on my podcast.
Thank you very much. I really, really enjoyed all the questions and everything.